Welcome to the deep dive. When we think about chronic health problems, things like high blood pressure, maybe kidney issues, even that sort of unexplained fatigue or brain fog, we tend to see them as, well, separate problems.
Distinct diagnoses, huh?
Exactly. Hypertension is one thing, kidney disease or TEC-CKD, that's something else entirely. But today, we're looking at something that flips that idea completely on its head. We've been digging into some material that argues these conditions, hypertension, a specific type of heart failure called TEC-CKD, even vascular cognitive issues, they're not separate at all.
It's a fascinating perspective.
They're basically different ways the same underlying systemic failure shows up in different parts of the body.
Precisely. It's this idea of a progressive loss of vascular coherence.
Yeah.
Think of it like the harmony in your circulatory system breaking down.
Harmony, I like that.
Yeah, and when that coherence goes, the problems surface in, whichever tissues are most vulnerable. And the really striking part, it argues the failure doesn't start where you might think, not in big vessels, not in the heart muscle directly.
Where then?
It starts deep inside, microscopic level, in the mitochondria of the cell's power stations, and in the endothelium, those crucial cells lining every single blood vessel.
Wow. Okay, so our goal today for you listening is to trace this whole cascade. We're going from inside the mitochondria out to the cell surface, then to the whole circulatory system, and seeing how that leads to these chronic diseases.
Right. Hopefully you'll have that aha moment connecting these seemingly disparate health issues.
Let's get into it. Okay, so if it's a systems problem, where's ground zero? The sources point to energy dynamics gone wrong inside the cell. Where does the clock really start ticking on this?
It kicks off with something called the redox stalled state. This happens inside the mitochondria.
Redox stalled state, okay.
Yeah, picture the electron transport chain, the tech, like a conveyor belt in a factory. Now, imagine we're constantly overloading it, often with, say, chronic excess calories. We're pushing more electrons onto that belt than the machinery at the end can
You're
handle.
free to back up.
Exactly, a backup. Technically, it's a high proton motive force, delta sin.
Right, proton motive force. Let's pause there. For those of us, like me perhaps, whose biochemistry is a bit rusty,
Yeah.
what does a high delta sim actually mean for the cell? What does it feel like?
Well, think of it like a dam holding back way too much water. The pressure builds and builds.
Okay.
And when that pressure gets excessive, the system gets stressed, unstable, starts to leak.
Leak.
Yeah, electrons start leaking out, usually a complex ion 3 of that conveyor belt, the TEC's ion Fiske. And these leaks, they generate extra reactive oxygen species, TEC's ROC.
Ah, ROS, the free radicals we hear about.
Specifically, superoxide, TEC's O2 bullet oil. And that's the initial spark, really, the spark that can start poisoning the whole system.
And that spark finds a target pretty quickly, doesn't it? Something critical in the vascular system.
Immediately, it hits a molecule called tetrahydrobiopterin, TEC's BH4O.
TEC-BH44. Okay, why is that one so important?
Because TEC's BH4O is absolutely essential for the main enzyme that runs the blood vessel's endothelial nitric oxide synthase, or TEC's ERO.
Right, TEC-NRO makes nitric oxide, right? The good stuff that relaxes vessel.
That's the one. TEC's ERO is the master regulator, keeps things flexible and healthy.
So what happens when its helper molecule, TEC-BH44, gets damaged by those ROS?
The enzyme, TEC-NOS, it basically goes rogue. It uncouples.
Uncouple.
Yeah, it's still active, still using energy, but instead of making protective TEC-NO, the uncoupled TEC-NOS starts producing more superoxide, more ROS.
Oh, wow. So the very system meant to protect the vessel starts making the toxin that harms it. That sounds bad.
It's a vicious cycle, a self-amplifying injury loop. Any remaining TEC-UO reacts instantly with all this new superoxide.
And that forms.
Peroxynitrite, TEC's ONOO. And peroxynitrite is, well, it's like a cellular hitman, extremely damaging.
And what's the key target for peroxynitrite that sort of seals the deal, making this damage harder to reverse?
It attacks the mitochondrion itself. Specifically, it oxidizes cardiolipin.
Cardiolipin.
Yeah, it's a special lipid, crucial for the structure of the mitochondrial inner membrane, the folds called cristae. If you damage cardiolipin, the mitochondrion structure starts to fail. It goes from reversible stress to potentially irreversible injury.
Ensuring the ROS leak continues.
Exactly. And that failure signal now starts to spread outside the cell.
Okay, that's a cascade, all right. All starting from basically a cellular energy traffic jam. We've got mitochondrial sabotage and enzyme flipping sides. What happens when this mess hits the cell surface? The source material talks about this surprising physical buffer layer.
That's right. It emphasizes the glycocalyx and his partner, the exclusion zone water layer, or text easy water.
Glycocalyx and easy water.
Okay. So picture the glycocalyx like a very fine, fuzzy, negatively charged coating lining the inside of all your blood vessels.
Like a carpet.
Sort of, yeah. A very delicate, sugary carpet. It controls stickiness, how the vessel senses blood flow, permeability, all sorts of things.
And the easy water.
Because the glycocalyx is negatively charged, it organizes the water molecules right next to it into a special structured layer, the text-easy layer. This layer acts like a tiny capacitor.
A capacitor.
Yeah, it smooths out the turbulent pulses of blood flow, absorbs the shock of your heartbeat, keeps blood cells from literally scraping against the vessel wall. It's the vessel's shock absorber.
Okay, a crucial buffer.
Oh.
So back to segment one, we've got the storm of oxidative stress, peroxynitrite. What does that do to this fuzzy layer?
It triggers enzymes, things like TEXT-MMP2 and TEXT-MMP9. And these enzymes, they basically chew up the glycocalyx.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it gets thin, starts shedding. And when that structure breaks down, the negative charge is lost, and that protective text-easy layer, it just dissipates.
So the shock absorber is gone.
Instantly gone. The vessel wall loses its buffer, its capacitance.
How does losing a fuzzy layer lead to big problems like heart failure or kidney disease? That seems like a big jump.
It's because of something called the mechanosensing flip.
Mechanosensing flip.
Okay, so a healthy vessel feels smooth, steady blood flow that's laminar shear and interprets it as all clear, time to relax, stay anti-inflammatory. It activates good genes like TEXKLF21.
Right.
But when the glycocalyx buffer is gone, the endothelium suddenly feels everything, every little pulse, every bit of turbulence. It misinterprets that normal, previously protective flow as damaging oscillatory or disturbed shear.
It gets jumpy.
Exactly. And that misinterpretation flips the switch. Instead of calm signals, you get injury and inflammation signals. Pathways like TEXPiezo get activated, leading to things like TEXPiezoVest. Inflammation. Leakiness in the vessel wall. The whole environment shifts towards damage. And now the stage is really set for system-wide failure.
Okay, this is where it really connects the dots for me. We've got the cellular mess, the surface buffer collapsing. How does that localized damage in the vessel lining translate into, say, TEXT-HFPEF in the heart or kidney damage? The source mentioned a bifurcation.
Yes, the breakdown kind of splits onto two tracks, affecting the big arteries and the tiny capillaries differently, but happening at the same time.
Two tracks. Okay, what's track one?
Track one is macrovascular stiffening. This is about the big pipes, like your aorta. They lose their flexibility, their compliance. We call that text down narrow.
Compliance down. Why do they stiffen?
Remember those text MMP enzymes triggered by the oxidative stress?
Yeah, the ones chewing up the glycocalyx.
They also attack elastin. Elastin is a protein that gives arteries their stretchy, springy quality. And when elastin fibers get fragmented by TEXT-MMP, that damage is largely structural. It's very hard to reverse.
So you get stiff pipes. What's the big deal? What's the consequence of a stiff aorta?
The pressure wave from your heartbeat travels much faster down that stiff pipe. That's a high pulse wave velocity, or TEXPWV.
Okay.
Normally, the reflected wave comes back to the heart when it's resting in diastole. But with high TEXPWV, it slams back much earlier during late systole while the heart is still trying to push blood out.
Ouch. Extra work for the heart.
A lot of extra work. It increases the load on the left ventricle, makes it thicken up, become stiff itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads directly to the TEXT-HFpEF-APU picture, a stiff heart struggling against stiff arteries.
Okay, that's track one, stiff big arteries leading to heart problems. What's track two?
Track two is microvascular rarefaction. Mm. This happens in the tiniest vessels, the capillaries.
Rarefaction, like they become rare?
Pretty much, yeah. That chronic lack of text we talked about, plus all the inflammation, it makes the capillaries constrict, and eventually they just wither and disappear structurally.
They die off.
Exactly. So the overall resistance in the microcirculation goes up. That's text rare.
Resistance up. And the consequence there?
It's what the paper calls flow poverty. Organs that need a lot of blood flow, the kidneys, the brain, even working muscles, they just don't get enough, especially when demand increases. Their perfusion reserve drops.
That leads to?
Well, in the brain, it contributes to vascular cognitive decline,
mm-hmm.
You know, that memory fog, processing speed issues. In the kidneys, it leads to protein leaking into the urine albuminuria and eventually loss of filtering units, nephrons. That's classic text to CKD.
Wow. So track one, stiff large pipes. Track two, disappearing small pipes. This mismatch sounds chaotic.
It is chaotic.
Yep.
And that leads to the unifying concept, the LC resonance collapse.
LC resonance, like an electrical circuit?
Exactly like that. The circulatory system functions kind of like a text LC circuit, L for inertance, blood's momentum, C for compliance, vessel stretchiness. For smooth, efficient flow, it needs to be tuned like an orchestra. But when compliance drops and resistance climbs, the tuning is destroyed. The heart and the vascular tree become mismatched. The whole system shifts into this high pulsatility, low coherent state.
The orchestra is out of tune.
Completely out of tune. Energy gets amplified where it's harmful, like slamming back on the heart, and flow gets choked off where it's needed most, in the tissues.
And this changes how we should think about things like atherosclerosis, right? Plaques in arteries?
Absolutely. This framework suggests atherosclerosis isn't the start of the problem.
It's a symptom.
It's more like the structural scar. It's the body's attempt to catch up the damage caused by that chronic failure in sensing flow, the mechanotransduction failure. And the plaques tend to form where the flow is already disturbed, where the glycocholytics was probably damaged first.
This is huge, but it brings up a really critical question, especially for anyone listening who's dealing with these conditions. If track one involves structural damage, like that fragmented elastin you mentioned, which you said is hard to reverse, is there hope? I mean, is it game over if your arteries are already stiff?
No, absolutely not. And this is where the model actually offers real leverage, real hope.
Okay.
The process is layered. Those early stages, the biochemical stuff like texanidose uncoupling, the early thinning of the glycocholics, those are seen as highly reversible.
Good.
The structural changes, like the lost elastin. Okay, maybe you can't fully rebuild that structure easily, but you can absolutely functionally compensate for it. We can work to restore the coherence of the system, even if some pipes are a bit stiffer than ideal.
Functionally compensate. I like that. So how can we actually track these different stages in people beyond just a blood pressure cuff?
We need better tools, yeah. For stage one, that early functional damage, we can look at tests like flow-mediated dilation or ECVMD50. If it's low, say less than 6%, that suggests TEX-NMA isn't working right.
Okay.
For stage two, the microvascular damage and glycocholics breakdown. A key marker is the urine albumin creatinine ratio, or TEXT-ACR. If that's elevated, over 30 milligrams, it's a sign of leaky endothelium system-wide, not just a kidney problem.
A systemic marker.
Got it. And stage three, the structural stiffening, that's where things like pulse wave velocity, TEXT-PWV come in, or even just high pulse pressure.
So the whole approach shifts, right? It's not just about lowering the number on the blood pressure machine.
Exactly. It's about restoring vascular coherence, fixing the flow dynamics.
Okay, so based on this specific cascade, what are the kinds of interventions that make sense? What does the source material point to?
You target each layer. For the root cause, that mitochondrial redox stress, the high delta sim, the energy traffic jam.
Yeah.
We need things that balance energy supply and demand. The standout is zone two aerobic conditioning.
Zone two, moderate intensity.
Right, consistently exercising at maybe 45-70% of your max heart rate or oxygen uptake.
Yeah.
That specific intensity seems ideal for improving how the text handles electrons and lowering that damaging mitochondrial pressure.
Makes sense. And what about fixing that rogue TEXNS enzyme, getting it back to making text?
You need to recouple it.
Yeah.
The sources suggest supporting TEXBH44 with specific nutrients, like cocoflavanols, for example.
Interesting.
And using L-citrulline. It seems to be a better way to get arginine, the fuel for TEX, into the system compared to taking L-arginine itself orally.
Okay. Now, I like this next one you mentioned earlier, helping the glycocholics and that TEXT-ESO water layer. What can people do?
Well, managing blood sugar and sodium is key, obviously, but there's a mechanical technique too.
Yeah.
Slow, deep diaphragmatic breathing, specifically aiming for a rate around 0.1 hertz, which is about 6 breaths per minute.
Just breathing.
Yeah. It seems this slow, rhythmic breathing pattern helps create smooth, laminar shear flow, especially in the veins returning to the heart. And that smooth flow is the signal the endothelium needs to calm down, activate protective genes like TEXKLF2, and potentially help stabilize that near-wall water structure.
Fascinating. Okay, and lastly, what about the capillaries that disappeared the rarefaction? Can we bring those back?
We need to encourage regrowth or recruitment. The main signal for that seems to be resistance training, lifting weights, bodyweight exercises that puts mechanical stress on the muscles, that signals the need for more capillaries.
Build muscle, build capillaries.
Sort of, yeah. And pharmacologically, this is where drugs like the SGLT2 inhibitors seem really interesting. They appear to have protective effects on the microvasculature in the heart and kidneys, beyond just lowering blood sugar.
Right.
Oh, and crucially, treating conditions like sleep apnea, Those repeated drops in oxygen overnight are incredibly stressful and damaging to the endothelium. Gotta stop those cycles. Hashtag tag outro URL.
This has been, well, it really reframes everything, doesn't it? We started talking about hypertension, text HFPEF, text CKD, vascular dementia, even atherosclerosis as separate things.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up seeing them perhaps as just different manifestations, different organ expressions of this single underlying failure of LC resonance.
Yeah.
It's all stemming from this initial redox stress, this endothelial breakdown leading to stiff pipes here and starved capillaries.
Exactly. And the real power here, I think, is that it explains why certain interventions have such broad effects.
No.
Why does aerobic exercise help your heart and your brain and your kidneys?
Right.
Why do SGLT2 inhibitors show benefits way beyond diabetes? It's because they're not just treating one symptom. They're likely helping to restore the underlying conditions needed for vascular coherence to reemerge.
They're tuning the orchestra back up.
That's a great way to put it. Even if some instruments, some vessels have some structural damage, you can still improve the overall harmony and function significantly.
So maybe the final thought for you, the listener, to take away is this. If this whole devastating cascade really does kick off with that high pressure inside your mitochondria, that cellular energy traffic jam,
the redox stalled state.
Right. Then maybe ask yourself, what in my daily life, my environment, might be keeping that pressure high? Is it being sedentary too much? Is it chronic stress? Maybe constant overfueling, even with healthy food?
It shifts the focus upstream.
It really does. Addressing those fundamental lifestyle factors might be the most powerful way to prevent that first spark, or even begin to reverse the process and restore that vital vascular coherence. Something to think about.